This program was produced at and first aired on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio, with support from New Zealand On Air. Ka pai, irirangi te motu, MPR. If you're enjoying this podcast in Manawatu, you could make your very own, just like this one. MPR exists to help people like you tell your story or share your passion on air and online. Check out mpr.nz for more information.
Hi, I'm Greg Watson, and welcome to this week's show of Property Matters, where we talk all things property here on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio. Te reo irirangi o ngā tangata o Manawatu. So it's lovely to have your company. We've got a little bit of a mixed bag, as always. Here we're going to start with looking at interest rates and see what's happening there. We've got a part of Europe that is actually paying you $27,000 to move there. So let's look at what that's all about. I do like bringing those stories to you from time to time because it's nice to dream of living in a nice, warm place in Europe. So we'll bring that to you. As well as that, if you wanted to spend a little bit of money at this end of the world, we'll look at what $15.25 million can buy you near Tauranga. And then we'll look at some bad landlords, bad tenant type situations, which we've got a couple of those this week. And those can serve as warnings to both landlords and tenants of how things can go badly. So first up this week, this article from the last few days says BNZ makes further cuts to mortgage rates. And like a lot of the other banks, just 1 week after its first cut mortgage rates, BNZ has lowered them further. Effectively, the bank has lowered both its classic and standard rates. A six-month loan was now 6.85% and a one-year loan was 6.45%. An 18-month loan was now 5.99% and a two-year loan 5.89%. So all of those are dropping up to a fifth of a percentage point further. And remember, those sound like tiny amounts, but they can really make a difference to if you are struggling to pay a mortgage, or alternatively, if you want to look at your ability to pay a mortgage when it comes to purchasing a property. So originally on the 20th of August, it made cuts to housing rates, some dropping up to 0.9%, but just recently it's lowered them more as well. Bit of a difficult situation if you've got money in the bank, so to speak, as term deposit rates would be coming down also. And then this story from today at the time of recording, Westpac cuts its home loans. And all of the home loans between 6 months and 4 years have been cut by Westpac. And that's given the bank the outright lowest advertised two-year special rate of the country's five major banks and the joint lowest on all other advertised special fixed terms. The six-month fixed term loan special rate dropped 0.4% to 6.85, and their two-year rates actually dropped 0.2 to 5.79. So things heading in the right direction, a sign that the economy is doing better. We know that inflation has come down, which is good for everybody. And with these rates dropping, again, it just really helps out. And Westpac NZ General Manager of Product Sustainability and Marketing, Sarah Hearn, said the falling home loan rates was good news for both existing homeowners and first home buyers. These changes mean our popular one-year advertised special home loan rate has fallen 0.69% over the past 2 months, delivering meaningful cost savings. And that would be, depending on the size of your loan, could be anywhere from $20 to $80 a week, possibly even more if you live in Auckland or if you have a large loan. She does say, though, like I said in reference to the last article, at the same time, we know term deposit and savings customers will be watching falling interest rates closely. So there we go. That was they're all responding to each other. There's competition out there. Competition is good. We know the banks make a lot of money. And it's good to have the Reserve Bank making some changes, which then encourages banks to reduce their interest rates as they can still achieve the margins that they want. This next article on Stuff, and this is on August the 29th by Alan Granville, in case you wanted to look it up because it's got some fairly good, cool pictures. This part, beautiful part of Europe will pay you $27,000 to move there. Of course, there are caveats. So this remote Spanish region of Extremadura is offering grants of up to €15,000 each, or just under $27,000 to 200 digital nomads. To qualify, applicants must be tech professionals and have not lived in Extremadura for at least 6 months prior to applying. Women, people under the age of 30, as well as anyone keen to move to a town with a population of less than 5,000 could get the maximum grant. So it's a little bit of a sliding scale. It shows a picture of a village of Feria in Extremadura on this article, and it's beautiful. It's got a beautiful church, lovely terracotta-coloured tiles on the roofs, white walls, just beautiful. Where is it? Well, I'll get to that shortly, but first of all, I'll just mention what they say here in the article, that one of the lesser visited regions of Spain is hoping to entice some bright young things to move there, and it's prepared to splash some cash. On offer is up to the 27,000 New Zealand dollars, who are able to live in Extremadura but work remotely. The landlocked autonomous community borders Portugal and is far away from the bright lights of Madrid and Barcelona. It has the lowest population of any of the regions, but offers nature galore, historic towns and a cheap cost of living. On the flip side, it has one of the country's lowest GDPs per capita and a high unemployment rate. So imagine if you're a digital nomad, working for clients in countries that can pay you well, and living somewhere like that would be incredibly cheap. You could do really well for yourself, charging out at a rate of another country while living with the costs of the low-cost place that you live. Why digital nomads? Well, what it lacks in infrastructure, it makes up with fibre optic and mobile coverage being described as above the national average. To qualify, applicants must be tech professionals and not lived in Extremadura for at least 6 months prior to applying. Authorities have £2 million ready to invest in new people, but there are different grants. They go through the details there, and you may get more or less, just depending on what your situation is. There's various categories that you can go to. It says that Kiwis can apply, but will first have to successfully negotiate the Spanish Digital Nomad Visa Scheme, which has been described as complex and intense. If you were interested, you could Google Extremadura General Electronic Access Point. So it's one of the range of schemes in Europe which hope to add fresh blood to regions with plummeting populations. Recently, picturesque Tuscany in Italy was offering grants between 10,000 and 30,000 euros to buy a house in one of the region's mountainous communities. The island of Sardinia was also flashing the cash in 2022 to get people to move there. It launched a scheme worth more than 105 million euros to entice people to come and buy a home on the island. And Ireland, yes, the country of Ireland, was also offering renovation grants of up to 60,000 euros to 84,000 euros in remote areas to do up vacant properties. So if you're able to move easily, you're in the right sort of line of work. You might want to have a look at some of those pictures there. And, of course, read all the caveats. There's important fine print on those. Yet, certainly, if you were a young enough person without commitments or a person without direct commitments, then that would be something which would be a real interesting thing to do. Now, if at the other end of the scale you wanted to spend a little bit of money, there's some money burning a hole in your pocket. This article by Colleen Hawkes on August 27 says, here's what $15.25 million buys you in the country near Tauranga. And this has got pictures, of course. I would highly advise this, looking this up on stuff.co.nz. Ultra luxury, privacy and truffles. This stunning near new minimalist home in Oropi, excuse the pronunciation, near Tauranga, offers all that and more. Skyview is one of several ultra-high-end properties hidden away in the Western Bay of Plenty. Listed with an asking price of $15.25 million, the 800-square-metre house was designed by leading architecture firm Stufkins & Chambers and built by Shaw Builders for owners who value their privacy. Now, to put into context 800 square metres of house, it's about five times the size of an average home, or just over between three and four times the size of a new built four-bedroom double garage home with an ensuite. So a large home. And yes, there's a gated entry and a long driveway over 200 metres that gradually opens up to reveal the house. Hawan says the established mature and often exotic planting was chosen for year-round flowering to attract and feed bird life and to create a lush subtropical microclimate. The property, which covers 12 hectares, that's approximately the size of 12 rugby fields, even comes with its own truffle farm. Suffice to say, the U-shaped house on a hill was grand, with a striking modernist architecture. The house wraps around three sides of a large subtropical landscaped outdoor living area with a pool and offers expensive views down and across the rolling countryside. It is really magnificent. Again, you can look this up on stuff.co.nz. There are 6+ bedrooms, 5 bathrooms, a 5-car garaging all up, and 4 bedrooms in the main house and 2 in an apartment that also has its own kitchen and living area. An extra large kitchen in the main house offers high-end appliances, and it just goes on. The agent says it showcases an exceptional quality of fixtures and finishes throughout, including an array of high-end imported materials, polyform kitchen cabinetry, Bloom hardware, Otsumagaki wall renders, and magnificent expanses of structural glass. Excuse me. So I'm just looking ahead at some of the pictures. It's really something quite amazing. And so, yes, it's got all sorts. There's even a hidden high-tech utility room, which just contains all the technology to run the house, studio and gym. It's really something like you'd see in LA. So to think that that's here in Tauranga and available for $15.25 million is pretty amazing. The article's quite good as well because it goes on and looks at some other properties that have sold for or were for sale for large prices as well. So now we're going on to a bad landlords, bad tenants section of the show, where I look at some of the news articles relating to things that have happened in rental properties and they're not normally good. This one, for example, if you're a landlord, have a listen to this. Landlord fined $20,000 after tenant's child contracts paratyphoid fever. A dairy flat tenant has won a case against his landlord in the Tenancy Tribunal after a faulty septic tank, which took a year to fix, caused his daughter to fall seriously ill because of ground contamination. The tenant, whose name was withheld in the tribunal decision, was awarded $20,620 for a series of failures by landlord Roger Sue to maintain the property to a safe and healthy standard, the tribunal ruled. Speaking to Stuff after the tribunal decision was issued, Sue said he disagreed with the tribunal's decision and planned to make a counter-complaint. However, his initial attempt to appeal the decision was declined. I misunderstood the tribunal system. I did not know I needed to bring evidence, he said. The tribunal found that 2 months into the tenancy, the sewer drain started backing up, causing wastewater to discharge onto the dairy flat property. The pipes to the dispersal field were blocked and the pump burned out trying to push waste through the clogged pipes. This issue persisted until the system was replaced about 12 months later. During that time, the tribunal says the tenant's daughter became sick. The tenant later told Stuff his daughter contracted paratyphoid fever by eating eggs contaminated by the wastewater being spilled into the garden where the family's chickens ate. Yuck. Paratyphoid fever is listed as a notifiable disease by the Ministry of Health, meaning he and his wife were reported for having exposed their daughter, which was stressful for all the family. The tenant told Stuff he gave the landlord a letter from the health board. Eventually, he got a contractor to come in, and it took another 3 months to install the new system, the tenant said. Sue was fined $100 for each week it took to resolve the issue, totalling up to $5,200. The tribunal noted the tenant tried claiming exemplary damage as well, but was unsuccessful because he did not file the complaint within 12 months of the unlawful act. That's a little tip for tenants there. The tenant said, "We saw people on the news living out of their cars because there weren't enough properties available. We were scared of ending up in that situation, so we just tried to get it sorted ourselves." The tenant said he only filed the complaint after battling with Sue for over more than a year to get the bond refunded, which tribunal found was being unjustly withheld. A breach of obligation to maintain and repair the property resulted in $7,500 of the fine. The tenant told tribunal Sue wanted to arrange for a healthy homes assessment, but it was never done. He ended up organising an assessment himself. The report found the premises failed to meet the Healthy Home standards for insulation, moisture ingress, draft stopping, ventilation and heating. The tenant told Stuff when he raised issues with Sue, he was told repeatedly, if you don't like it, you can move out. Sue partially denied this claim when spoken to by Stuff, saying the only time I said that was when he complained about the quality of the property near the end of our agreement. I felt like that was fair enough. If he didn't enjoy the property, he should look for another one. The remaining compensation was made up of a series of fines relating to maintenance of the driveway and retaining wall, a new water tank the tenant purchased, and an illegal letting fee charged the tenant. So many things done wrong there. So many things done wrong. One would assume this is just a private owner doing things themselves and getting so much wrong. So just to reiterate, the size of that payment that the owner has to make is over $20,000. So it's certainly worth getting some expert advice and to treat these matters very seriously indeed. There may be two sides to that story. The landlord was unable to bring the evidence, he says, to court. So that's still, the appeal was overturned, so he would have to appeal that to the district court if he wanted to, again, defend that case. So anything, generally speaking, if you're a landlord, think health and safety. Think anything related to sanitary, often to water and definitely to electrical. You need to act on very quickly indeed. As you could see there, that landlord was actually had to pay $100 per week for the 52 weeks. And so the quicker you get things fixed, the quicker that everyone's happy and can move on. Also, reading between the lines there, there was a dispute between the owners and tenants at the end of the tenancy, which quite possibly could go both ways. The tenants waited 12 months to bring that case, or over 12 months, which meant that they couldn't bring everything that they wanted to. So consider that, tenants, if you were going for exemplary damages where a landlord is breaking the rules. That landlord would have been up for probably another well over $7,000 of fines had they been able to bring that. Here's another one. Close your ears if you don't like insects. This article by Esther Taunton on August 27th on stuff.co.nz says cockroach infestation was so bad, renters were kept awake by the sound of insects scuttling. Yuck. So it actually makes my skin crawl. So what does it say? Just here it says, tenants who lived with the cockroach infestation so severe, the insects scuttling kept them awake at night, have been awarded $12,000. Again, think of the size of these fines if you are self-managing rental properties. The cockroaches were also blamed for the failure of two dishwashers at the property, but were not the only issue at the $1,300 a week rental, the tenancy tribunal heard. So it obviously seems to be quite a nice place if it was $1,300 per year. According to the recently released tribunal decision, the six tenants were also without a working stove for months before being asked to pay for a replacement and were threatened with eviction if they did not pay more than $700 to replace a toilet they were blamed for breaking. The landlord also raised the rent to $1,400 before a full year of the tenancy had passed. Just so you're aware, that's illegal, unlawful. So under the Residential Tenancies Act, rent cannot be increased within 12 months of the start of a tenancy. The property was rented through PR Property Management Limited as the agent for Barvika Enterprises Limited. You'd wonder why a property management company would breach those laws. However, it is an unregulated industry, so if you're using property managers, do some good background checks on who you're using. So evidence submitted to the tribunal by the tenants showed the landlord was aware of the cockroach infestation and had assured the tenants it would be treated before they moved in. That's the important part. So the infestation was already existing. If something's existing at the start of the tenancy, it's the landlord who needs to resolve. So the landlord claimed pest control measures were taken prior to the tenants moving in, but was unable to provide evidence of that. The tenants said the house was treated not long after they moved in, but that was unsuccessful, leaving them to buy bug bombs to try and control the cockroaches. The insects were also blamed for the failure of two dishwashers at the property, the first of which was not working at the beginning of the tenancy. The landlord arranged for a replacement dishwasher and a new appliance arrived a month later but soon stopped working. An appliance technician told the tenants the cockroach infestation had led to the breakdown of both dishwashers. In her decision, tribunal adjudicator Michelle Pollock said the landlord did nothing further to address the issue during the tenancy, but a receipt showed pest control services treated the property for cockroaches 2 weeks after the tenants moved out. The tenants endured several cockroach... Just read that sentence again. The tenants endured a severe cockroach infestation for the duration of the tenancy that interrupted their sleep at night from the sounds of them scuttling across the ceilings and caused issues with the dishwasher appliances, she said. This ongoing infestation has also led to them having to have all their belongings decontaminated after their tenancy ended and before they could safely move their belongings into a new premises. The tenants also raised concerns with a faulty gas stove at the property, with six tenants and only one hob working when they moved in. Cooking was difficult, they said. They're also concerned about the safety risks of having faulty gas hobs. Towards the end of February 2023, the landlord asked the tenants to collect a new stove from a residential address, telling them they would have to pay the seller $250. The tenants refused, and a week later, the landlord delivered the stove to the property. However, when a technician arrived to install it, the stove was found to be the wrong size for the benchtop. The old stove was reinstalled, and another month passed before a working appliance was installed. The tenants also provided evidence that the landlord had threatened them with eviction if they did not cover the cost of replacing a cracked toilet at the property. And while the landlord said the tenants cracked the toilet and the damage was more than fair wear and tear, no evidence was provided to support that claim. Remember, just as an aside, landlords, that's what you have insurance for. The tenants, however, provided proof the toilet was old and any damage was not intentional or caused by carelessness on their part. Further evidence showed the property manager had a pattern of trying to get the tenants to pay for costs of maintenance that were the landlord's responsibility, Pollock said. The tribunal awarded the tenants $12,640 in compensation and damages, and that includes $3,642 for the time they were without a stove, $4,607 for the landlord's failure to maintain the dishwasher, and $1,128 for the failure to control the cockroaches. So I guess the issue here is the delays in getting things done. And goodness only knows why those passage of events happened. Again, there's always more to a story. And I can't even speculate on that, so I won't. That's not fair for me to do so. So finally, in the bad landlords and bad tenants section, this article by Marty Sharp on August the 30th on Stuff: leak, mould, rotten deck and unannounced visits cost landlord $17,000. The wall leaked and bubbled with mould, the kitchen had a hole in it, the deck was severely rotten and the landlord made frequent unannounced visits. These were just some of the conditions that led to a landlord being ordered to pay his former tenants more than $17,000 in compensation and exemplary damages. The landlord, who also owned the property, was Ahmed Martin. The location of the property and the names of the two women who rented the property have been suppressed by the tenancy tribunal. Suppression, just by way of reminder, is when you are successful in bringing a case, they suppress your name so it doesn't be held against you if applying for other rental properties. The woman rented the property, which consisted of a main dwelling and a self-contained second dwelling, from August 2021 until April this year. Initially, the rent was $650 a week before climbing to $777 a week from September 2022 and then to $825 a week from September last year. The recently released tribunal finding runs to 21 pages and includes a long list of unlawful actions by Matten. Among these was a leak that appeared in the lounge wall in January 2023. When the tenants told Matten of the leak, he replied that the house was old and these things happen. The wall, which became damp and mouldy, began bubbling and wasn't fixed until October 2023, and only after the tenants raised it with Matten in a formal email. And there is a picture. The picture that's on here isn't a picture of the actual incident, so let's not go there. A severely rotten deck has been causing the tenants concern for some time, particularly after one of them had put a foot through it. They told Matten numerous times how dangerous it was. Matten decided to fix the deck himself by nailing random pieces of timber over the rotten boards, leaving an uneven surface with nails protruding in various places. When the tenants asked him to get a proper builder to fix the deck, Matten said he didn't need a builder and he enjoyed doing it. Throughout the whole tenancy, there had been a hole in the wall of the kitchen of the main house in which an extractor fan was supposed to have been installed. Matten refused to cover the hole, which led to cold air and drafts, which meant there was no way of ventilating the kitchen when cooking. There were several other areas in which Matten's performance as a landlord was inadequate. These included a failure to have an adequate wall or underfloor insulation, failure to meet the moisture ingress standard, from below and above, and failing to meet the smoke alarm standard from June 22 until April 2024. Tribunal adjudicator Michelle Pollock said the tenants have been in an undesirable and unhealthy living environment for the duration of the tenancy that does not meet most of the healthy home standards. Pollock said Matten's failures had led the tenants to live in cold, damp living conditions and increased the risk to their safety. The tenants had suffered stress, inconvenience and safety risk as a result of the house failing to meet the required standards, she said. And on top of this, Matten had made continued unannounced visits to the property despite repeatedly being told by the tenants that he could not. One of these visits occurred during a level 3 COVID-19 lockdown and he entered the property unannounced and removed items from the garage. Another occurred when tenants had friends around and saw Matten walk around the property and pass a lounge window. On another occasion, he arrived with a dog and stayed at the property for about 10 minutes. Matten was told on each occasion that he could not show up unannounced. The tribunal found he had acted unlawfully by breaching the tenant's quiet enjoyment of the property. The tribunal was also shown CCTV footage of Matten causing damage to the letterbox at the property and damage to one of the tenant's cars. Pollock ordered Matten to pay the tenants over $17,000 in exemplary damages and compensation. Boy, that's some crazy, crazy stuff. Done by landlords, two private landlords and one company. So there's a litany of things that have been done wrong. If you're listening to this and you don't know what the landlord's done wrong, then a little bit of research would certainly help you out. But something that underlies some of those cases is landlords, the individual owners of the properties, seem to be wanting to fix things themselves in the time that suits them, and or refusing to fix things in some cases. Tenants do have strong legal rights when it comes to not only healthy homes, but also just the general condition of the property. And people, I believe that all landlords should be educated or hold at least a minimum qualification to be a landlord so that they know these things. Because while it's all well and good, the landlords being fined and having to pay the fines, etc., what about the tenants who've had to live through all of that and the stress involved? I do believe, and I'm a strong believer, that the property management industry should be regulated, and that includes education and training. But not only that, but even private landlords should have to do qualifications similar to a driver's license if you're going to drive a car, because that's just my personal view. And it would stop a lot of these problems from happening, and it might even stop some people who aren't well suited to be landlords from being landlords. And that would be of benefit to all tenants, I believe. But that's all we've got for this week on Property Matters. I'm Greg Watson. It's been lovely having your company here on Manawatū People's Radio, mpr.nz. And of course, you can also find this where all good podcasts are found. Just search Greg Watson, Property Matters, and look for the smiley blonde guy on the picture, and we'll go from there. Thanks very much, and we'll catch up with you in a week's time.
If you enjoy this MPR podcast, please consider subscribing. Our podcasts are available on all major podcasting platforms: Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify, as well as the accessmedia.nz app. Support this show and others like it by giving a donation. For more information, go to www.mpr.nz/donate.